All right, the topic for today is Torah Sheba'al Peh. So we spoke yesterday and we said there's a story in Gemara Shabbos about the non-Jew that appears before Hillel and says, teach me, I want to convert on condition I only have to do Torah Shebechtav. And then I told you that he put on the board the Aleph Bet Gimel Dalet. He said, if you're going to need me/ the rabbis, to tell you just what the names of the letters are, certainly you need the rabbis to tell you what the psukim are. So here's the question. Hillelech proves from that. He goes, oh, obviously you need Torah Sheba'al Peh. Give me an example of a mitzvah that without the Torah Sheba'al Peh, you wouldn't understand. Shechita is the best. Okay, but Shabbos, pretty much any mitzvah you say. Okay, you know, can't do malacha. What's malacha? No idea. What's totafot? No idea. What's inu yim on Yom Kippur? No idea. What's a pre-Eitz Hadar? No idea. Okay, but Shechita is the strongest. It says, "Zavachtem b'vachacha, kasher tzviticha." You have to shech the animals as I instructed you, and you look, and there's no instructions. So it seems clear that along with a written Torah, there was an oral Torah. Now, it was supposed to be kept oral. Why? What's the need of having an oral Torah?
To have the footnotes of the Torah.
Why? So you're saying to keep it away from the Goyim. Okay, that's one reason. Okay.
You also have a connection with the next generation. You have to pass it down.
Pass it down. We need a relationship. Okay. Any other ideas? Look.
Aren't there like secrets that are like, that you write them down, like that he doesn't want to be revealed?
It could be. I always think of, like, when I was in high school, I'm sure you guys had to do the same thing. You analyze, like, some short story, and you have to explain what's the author trying to say. And for some reason, my teachers never got it right. You know, they always had a different understanding than I did. So what do you see from that? That there are multiple ways. Once you put something into writing, you'd have multiple interpretations. That's actually the truth. What happens with the Tzaddukim and the Karaites, Sadducees and the Karaites? They don't have an oral law, but they have multiple explanations of what the written law is really saying. So the idea of having an oral law is to have, according to the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim, a centralized authority telling me, here's Pshat. Okay? And that was passed down, you know, to select rabbis, and every time you would have discussions. What does this mean? Oh, let's go to the rabbis and they say, this is what it means. Ayin tachat ayin means you pay money. Okay, no, you thought otherwise. That's not what it means. So it's to keep one authoritative interpretation. Also, as you said, it's to keep the Rebbe-Talmud relationship. We want to have that connection. If you just have it in writing today, that's a big problem. You know, you learn in Gemaras that the concept of a Rebbe Mufak. Okay? Your Rebbe Mufak, wow. Maybe you even have to save your Rebbe Mufak before you save your parents. But today, like the Rebbe that you learn most of your Torah from, today they say hardly anyone has such a thing. Because most of our Torah knowledge comes from books. All right? Before books, you had a Rebbe, and you sat with him for years, and that's where you got your Torah from. Today, first of all, just our school system is year to year you have different Rebbe. Okay? You know, some people have, like, Rav Nevin Sully sat by Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach for decades. Okay, so there are probably still some people, maybe Rav Ami, who's here and goes to Rav Nevin Sully to ask him all his questions. Maybe he says, oh, Rav Nevin Sully is my Rebbe Mufak. The other end, you have people that say, like Rav Soloveitchik says, your Rebbe Mufak is the one who taught you how to learn. So it could be actually, I don't know, your seventh grade Rebbe, or it can be your Shana Aleph Rebbe. You know, it's, your Rebbe Mufak could have different interpretations. But
that one that you have a relationship with?
Like, yeah, it could be also Rav Soloveitchik says, your Rebbe Mufak is the one who made you a Torah personality. Okay, if that's true, then I actually feel, oh, I could be a Rebbe Mufak of a lot of my Shana Aleph students. Because, like, I think I hopefully get them to try to think the way a Torah Jew thinks. And if, Baruch Hashem, they go on for many, many years learning and they learn a lot more Torah afterwards, it doesn't take away from the effect that I had. But the necessity of having this human relationship is necessary, and that's why we're supposed to speak up oral. There are many achronim. I've heard both Nero of Soloveitchik and Rav Huttner, and I assume they're not the only ones, that say that even when the Torah Shel Hillel was put into writing, it was put into writing in such an esoteric way that you'd still need a Rebbe to help you understand what's going on. Right? And it was done for that reason. So you would still have that Talmud-Rebbe relationship. Now, it's easier to remember cases than abstract principles. Okay? When you guys, if you end up going to law school, so you'll see. Right? To sit there and just understand the abstract principles is very difficult. So what do? You do case study. And that's really what our Mishnah is. Our Mishnah is written as case study, usually with unusual cases, so that you can infer the more standard cases. And probably the authors of the Mishnah learned that from the Torah itself. Think about some of the unusual places that the Torah taught us some halachot, and you understand that it was done in this way to tell you to be sensitive. If I have to be sensitive in this case, obviously in other cases. I'll give you some examples. Where do we learn the halachot of human dignity? During war, it says that the soldier has to carry along with his weapon, what?
A
little shovel. And you might sit there and say, well, right now, the guy sees blood and guts all over the place. Who needs to worry about if someone covers up his excrement? Says, no, we're human beings. Take a shovel, dig a hole, go outside of the machana, dig a hole, cover it up. Human dignity. Another example, the duties to your wife. What are the three things that a husband has to provide for his wife? Share, ksus. Okay, share, ksus, and ona. Okay? You're right. Okay, but it doesn't just mean be a... Okay, but fine. Share, ksus, for ona. Yes. You have to satisfy your wife physically. Okay? Bezrat Hashem, you'll be able to do that. Okay? You have to... Okay? You have to provide shelter, food. Okay? Share, ksus, for ona. Fine. Clothing. Where is this mentioned? When you marry your maidservant. Now, what's the idea? You might have thought, listen, I'm doing her a favor. I ended up buying her as a maidservant. Now, you're right, she lucked out. I took a liking to her. And instead of when she reaches puberty saying, all right, you're on your own now, I'm going to marry her. Says the Torah, don't think that you can treat her like some second-hand item that you bought in a used clothing store. She's your wife. She deserves Sher Ksus Fona. If she deserves Sher Ksus Fona, obviously anyone else. Right? Another example. Bal Tashchis. Not a lot of waste. Where is that taught? Also during wartime. I need to cut down wood because I need to make weapons. Guess what? When you need to cut down wood, what don't you cut from? A fruit-bearing tree. Okay? Because I don't want to waste the fruit-bearing tree. So... You know, if I have to worry about it, certainly, you know, when I'm not in the midst of war. Or Egla Rufa. What's Egla Rufa? All right, when do I do it? Okay. And where is this found? Also, in like the war section. So I'm so used to seeing corpses all over the place. No, this is a corpse. We don't know why. We're blaming the closest community for not having escorted or at least given him tzedah l'derech, food for the way. And be sensitive. Don't become desensitized. I was friendly once with a nurse who worked in a ICU unit. And she said sometimes the people would come in and they were wrapped up in like bandages. Like she would ask the family, please bring a picture of what this person looked like. Could put on the bedpost. I want my nurses, she was like the head nurse, to remember we're dealing with a human being here. And we have to be sensitive. Okay? So wartime, you say, oh, I'm not sensitive to corpses. I've seen so many corpses. No, we're sensitive. Now, Torah Shebaal Peh had always been around, but Rebbe took private notebooks of Rebbe Meir, of Rabbi Akiva, of Rabbi Yishmael, from previous generations, edited and organized according to topic. And this was the Chiddush. Beforehand, people remembered things by the order of the Chumash. You think of Midrash, okay? Whether it be Midrash Halacha or Midrash Agadah. You start by looking at the Psukim and you go Pasuk after Pasuk, Paraf after Paraf, and you see ideas. Rebbe said, no, that's not the way we're going to do it. I'm going to divide it by topic. Okay? There'll be first Siddurim, then there'll be Masechtas, then there'll be Prakim, and there'll be Mishnayot. Right? Rebbe was super organized. So we know the Siddurim are, what are the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah?
Nesikim, Nashim, Taras, Kachos,
Kachim. Okay, what's the Rosh Hashanah? Zman Nakat. Zman Nakat. So Zion is Mem is Moed. Nun is then we have again another Nun, Nezikin, Kuf, Kachim, and then Taras. Zman Nakat. Okay? Shas stands for Shisha Siddurim. Okay? Because I learned Shas. They're talking about Shisha Siddurim. Today people say they think they're talking about the Masechtas, which is really not what it stands for. Okay? But Shisha Siddurim, if you finish Shas Mishnayis, that's really finishing Shas.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Shishim Sidurim.
Shisha Sidurim.
If you're saying Shas is in Gemara, wouldn't you say Shishim? So it's also kind of Shas?
Yeah, but the truth is it's 63, but okay.
Oh, okay.
Look, there are 63 Masechtot. Now, some people say we actually had a Gemara that dealt with it in Megillah, that whole beautiful idea where the guy went and he went from house to house and he filled himself with 60, you know, foods before he left. And that was referring to the Mishnayot, because I'm so for this beautiful idea. But that's because he took the Shisha, the 60, he ate the plate, right? So, right, the plate was, he ate the Korban Pesach, that was the last thing there, and he ate up everything, couldn't eat anything over. So, 63 turns into 60 because Seder, Masechet Nezikin, is, we have Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, and Baba Basra, so I take off two. And, as we'll learn this year after Pesach, learning Makos, Makos and Sanhedrin was considered one Masechta. Because the beginning of Masechet Makos is going to be, why are we starting off with this Masechta? Why are we starting off with this Mishnah? It seems very strange. Oh, because it connects to the end of Sanhedrin. Okay, so if you take off Makos, if you take off Baba Metzia, Baba Basra, so we knock our 63 down to 60. So there is an idea like that. Now, in Zra'im, there are 11 Masechtot, and they deal with what?
Agricultural
stuff. Like we have brachot there, but we have like ma'asrot, peyah, all sorts of agricultural laws. Moed has 12 Masechtot, and that deals with?
Shabbos.
Good. Shabbos, Chagim, good. Nashim has 7. It's the smallest, both in size of number of Masechtot and in size of Prakha Mishnat. And that deals with what?
Marriage,
divorce, oaths. Oaths. We have Nadarim and Nazir in there. Okay. Nezikin has 11 Masechtot, and that deals with?
Damages.
Good. Civil, criminal law. It also have Perkei Avot. Right? Why would Perkei Avot be in Nezikin?
Damage responsibility.
What?
Like mental damage, I guess.
What they usually say is, we want the Sanhedrin, this comes right after, like, you know, that they should be of the highest moral character. So, we talk about this. Kachim has 11 Masechtot, and Kachim deals with?
Stuff that's kosher.
Korbanot. It'll also deal with Kashrus, though. After we deal with Zvachim Munachos, we go into Chulin, which deals with, okay, Shechting for, you know, regular Korban. Then we have Tarot. Tarot's got 12 Masechtot, and that deals with what? Good. Toma, Tara, Mikvah's in there, Nida's in there. One guy, Eli Shimach, went to Shiloh for Shabbat, and they have 3 Para Adumas there. So I told him, I'll show him his whole Masechta called Masechet Para, deals with the laws. And he says, very cool, in order to deal with the Para Aduma, you have to be Tahor, never come in contact with Tamei Meis. So there are people in Shiloh that are doing home births so that their kids won't go to the hospital, so that they'll never come in contact with a dead body, so they can be the people that will be in charge of dealing with the Para Aduma. All right, they're planning for the Beit HaMikdash. They have 3 paradumas there. So he said, that's what they've been testing, they're checking it, making sure, yes. All right. Now, Rebbe put together the Mishnayot, Shas Mishnayot, around the year 200 of the Common Era because of fear that the Oral Torah would be forgotten. Right now, Rebbe enjoyed peace and serenity. He got along very well with the Roman Emperor, And he said, who knows how long this will last? As Rabbi Beryl once said, Ezu Chacham Haroes HaNolad. Rabbi was a very wise man. And he saw the future, and he saw the future was not going to be as great as it is now. Now I have the time. And he put together Shas Mishnayos, so we have it. Yes?
Is that not like, is to be saying to God, like we don't believe that this is going to be good for the Jews eventually, and that you're... It's
going to
be dark times for
the
Jews.
He says, like right now, Baruch Hashem, we have more peace than we've ever had. So let's make sure that this Torah is not forgotten. So this is what he did. Now, the early generations were able to look at the Mishnah and understand right away all of relevant halachot and all the information that needed to be gleaned. But as generations grew weaker, there was a need for an explanation. This perish on the Mishnah we refer to as
Gemara.
The Gemara. And the Mishnah and Gemara together we refer to as the Talmud. Okay? Talmud means learning. The Talmud was published both in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel. Okay? The one in Eretz Yisrael is referred to as the Talmud Yerushalmi. Where was it put together? Not in Yerushalayim. But up in the Galil area, Tzfat, Tveria, but out of Kavod. They called it Talmud Yerushalmi. And the Talmud Bavli was obviously put together in Bavel.
Why did you learn Yerushalmi?
So, the Yerushalmi was put together over 100 years before the Bavli. And therefore, the Bavli is considered more authoritative because they already had the Yerushalmi in front of them. So, if they disagreed, it wasn't disagreeing out of ignorance. So, I see your opinion and I disagree for this reason. In our Talmud Bavli, we quote the rabbis from Yerushalmi all the time. Okay, the rabbi that is quoted more than anyone else in both Yerushalmi and Bavli is Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, they're from the Talmud Yerushalmi, but they're quoted in the Bavli all the time. Rav Ami and Rav Asi, they're from the Yerushalmi, but they're quoting in the Bavli all the time. So it could be in the Talmud Bavli, just by the Bavli, Abayi and Rava are found more often than Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. But if you add the Yerushalmi and the Bavli, so Rabbi Yochanan is quoted more than anyone else. So the Bavli had everything in front of them. They disagreed. It was disagreed with a reason. I understand their views, and here's how we disagree. It's very cool. In the Art Scroll Yerushalmi, it points out the differences. Okay? I have the I have on Brachos, at least in the Hebrew one. I didn't check the English one. We have it up here. In the Hebrew one, I have the Hebrew one on Brachot. It has a little box on the bottom of each page where there's differences between how the Yerushalmi views things and the Bavli. It points it out. So it's very nice. You don't have to be a big Talmud Chacham and say, oh, I wonder how it's different. Like, it does all the legwork for you. It's very cool. Now, while the Mishnah was written in what language?
Hebrew.
We refer to it as Mishnaic Hebrew. It's a little bit different than the Tanakh's Hebrew. The Talmud is in Aramaic. Aramit. The Bavli was put together around the year 500 of the Common Era, and it has how many pages? 2,711. Okay? Dafyomi takes about 7.5 years. It's cute. I've seen now in Israel, they probably have it in America also, but you know, like on the back of cars, if someone runs a marathon, it'll say like 42, for like, oh, he runs 42 kilometers, he runs the full marathon, or 20, 21 if he runs the half marathon. So you see these cars, people that run marathons, it'll say a little place, they'll say 42, and they'll say, you know, like, I don't know, the marathon in Tel Aviv, or something, and it'll be on the cars. So I saw a cute little bumper sticker, it said 42, it said 2,711. And says, I'm also doing the marathon, learning Daf Yomi. You know, like, so it's very cute. You know, I saw it, I took a picture, sent it out on my family WhatsApp because I got three sons and one son-in-law that's and a grandson that's learning Daf Yomi. So I said, all right. So I put it on, it goes very cute. So instead of 42, it's a 27.11. It's cute.
Daf Yomi?
I have. A couple of times.
Wow.
Okay, but now I have a grandson that's learning Daf Yomi. It's pretty cool.
Guys are learning in Gaza right now, the soldiers.
Yeah, I'm sure that depending on.
I know.
It depends how busy they are. Yeah. I have to tell my kids all the time, Osiv mitzvah, patur min mitzvah. Okay? When the war's over, I'll find out how many of my kids, how far they are behind in their, you know, learning. But okay, fine. Then I'll realize which ones were more busy, which ones were busier and which ones were not. Okay, they don't have to say anything. I'll just say, oh, I couldn't do it. Okay, all right, now I get it. The ones say, oh, I had no problem. I kept up. I was like, okay, fine. In Bavli, there are only 37 Masechtot. Okay, there are 63 Mishnayos. Gemara, there's only 37 Masechtot. The Yerushalmi, there's some different Masechtot. There's more Masechtot, like in Zrayim. Right? There's a Shviyas, there's Peah, there's all sorts of stuff. Right? So we're missing some things. Okay? We actually even know we're missing some things because Rishonim quote Yerushalmi is in Masechtot that we don't have.
I'm just reading about it today.
Did I tell you about the forgery?
Someone tried to say that there was, they found like a new Masechtot.
Yeah, there was a person about 100 years ago who claimed that he found a couple of Masechtos of Talmud Yerushalmi, and he published it with his own commentary. And people bought it. And because of it, you even had someone as great as Chafetz Chaim that started to now changing some of the things that he did. Now, how brilliant was he? What did he do? First of all, there's a parish at the end of every Gemara Bavli called the Yafei Naim. The Yafei Naim tells you where there are corollary Gemaras in the Yerushalmi. So as we know, Talmud Bavli will be filled with, you know, Gemaras from all sorts of different things. Like Suvis, it's called Shas Katan, right? From all over the place. So, you know, Yafei Naim might be telling you Gemara Tumura, Gemara Menachos, Gemara Ksuvis, Yevamos, Shabbos. Okay, great. So this person now started gleaning, knowing that there are Yerushalmis, and people expect the Yerushalmis. Then, as I said, you had Rishonim that quoted Yerushalmis that we didn't have. So he started putting in what the Rishonim said is found, let's say, for argument's sake, Masechet Tumura, and started saying there. And then, this is the craziest thing, so brilliant, the Rambam often, what was the main job of the Mefarshim on the Rambam? Finding his sources. Sometimes they couldn't find. So what did this person do? He put it in the Yerushalmi. So if we never knew where the Rambam got his idea for whatever this halacha, it made it into this Yerushalmi, which is exactly what people expected. Of course Rambam didn't make it up. Of course he must have had a source. And we know that his source sometimes is from the Yerushalmi. So now what? They put it into the Yerushalmi. So it was done so well. So example, there's a machlokas, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, what the order of the parshiot are for the tefillin. What, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam first came out of it? No, it's now in a new Yerushalmi. So again, it's what people expected. So it's already now a machlokas in the Gemara Yerushalmi that later on Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam are arguing about. So because of this, Chafetz Chaim started putting Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin. He said, it's not just Machlokas Rashi Rabbeinu Tam. It goes back to the Gemara Yerushalmi.
But it's wrong.
You're right. You're right. Whoever did it was brilliant, though. I used to know his name. I don't have it in my notes. I don't remember his name.
Yeah, but isn't he a Russian?
I don't know. So the Rogachover, so brilliant. This is a crazy way that he figured it out. Rogachover goes through it and says, it's a forgery. Someone says, why do you say that? He says every single Masechta in Shas, Bavli, and Yerushalmi has at least the name of one rabbi that doesn't appear in any other Masechta. This Masechta doesn't have any new names. First of all, okay, it's weird to think that that has to be a rule, okay? But who's holding that you know the names of thousands of Tanoim and Amoraim and there's no new name in this? And therefore, obviously, it's a forgery. And then later on, it came out that it was a forgery. But he said it like right away. You know, he just said, there's no new names. Like, okay, that's crazy that first of all, someone noticed that. Right? Who notices that? Right? He reads from a second, there's the new guy. Here's a new kid on the block. Okay, who notices that? And then he reads and says, this is, okay. So anyway, it was later proven to be a forgery, but pretty cool. Anyway, 27:11. Now, Tanayim mean teachers. Amorayim means explainers. Okay, and that's what we said. That was what the Gemara was. Now, Ravina and Ravashi, they, as we know, they put together the Gemara, Talmud Bavli. What did they do? They used to have a Yarchei Kala. What's a Yarchei Kala? It's sort of what we have in Nativ. In Nativ, we have lots of alumni that come during the semester break. Right, we have some that come, let's say, before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they spend like Chagim with us. Certainly the English guys, because they don't start university till after Sukkot. Then we have some people, as we know, that come after school year's over because they go to some secular college and it's over in May. So they come and spend the last month. And then, as we know, because we've already been in the yeshiva, we'll have dozens, maybe up to 100 people that come just during the midwinter break. So too, in the time of the Gemara, you had Yarchei Kala, that students would come back to their yeshivas for a couple of weeks during Elul, before Rosh Hashanah, to go over all the halachot that they need for the upcoming Chagei Tishrei. They would come for a couple of weeks at the end of after Purim to get ready for Pesach, all the halachot that they need for Pesach. There's tons of halachot for Pesach. And when the students came, Ravina Ravashi now gave students, rules. Said, all right, Baruch, you're in charge of Shabbos. I want you to gather all the material that you can find that the rabbis, the Amoraim, over the last few hundred years have been discussing on the Mishnayos of Shabbos. Okay? Someone else, so some guys lucked out, they got Makos, you know, and other guys got Baba Basra, and everyone was giving different stuff, and they did this. And they got together, and they went through two revisions even. They got different people bringing in, everyone's bringing in. So it could also be, maybe I'm even making a mistake, I think it could be 1 year they said, okay, everyone come, everything we have in Shabbos. And they gather, and they did like a second revision. And then after all the stuff is gathered, they put together what we call the Talmud Bavli. Okay, after discussing it, arguing it out. Now, as we know, anytime you have Hebrew, so it's quoting a Mishnah or another Tannaitic source, otherwise it'll be in Aramaic. Now, what's amazing about the Talmud Bavli is the style that it's written in is it's if there's arguments going on in a local base medrash, even though we have rabbis that live in different generations and in different communities, but they're duking it out in the base medrash, so it sounds like it's like very vibrant, but they didn't necessarily need to even know each other, but that's the way it's written, and that's why it's like, you know, fun to learn. Now, the oldest manuscript that we have of Talmud goes back to 1342. We have what's called the Munich manuscript. It goes and it has the entire Shas. But in the Cairo Geniza, anyone ever hear of this?
Yeah.
Okay, the Cairo Geniza, they found, first of all, just because of the atmosphere in Egypt, very dry, stuff lasted for centuries and centuries. Solomon Schechter, who goes on to be like the head of the Jewish seminary in New York, JTS, he's, I think, one of the people that found most of the stuff and the people that are looking at it. They found Gemaras, not full sets, but pages from Gemaras that go back to the 6th century, which means right around when it was written. We said, when was it written? You know, around 500, okay? So, you know, the exact date, I think, is like 475 or 489, something like that. So within that century, they found pieces of Shas from around them. But a full set, 1342 Munich, and that's without commentaries. So you really want to know how large a piece of Gemara is. So then you see, oh, Shabbos got like 25 pages, and like this got 18, this got 17. Right? So and you can also see, you know, like Baba Basra is not the longest Masech. It's got tons of Tosfos. Shabbos is the longest.
Do you have like a thought that's like literally one
point? In Nedarim, there's one Amud that has no Gemara, just Tosfos. And even the other side's got about 4 or 5. I think it's Lamed Gimel in Nedarim, or Nazir. I forgot right now. It's Nazir. So it's then it's Nazir. It's Nazir, not Nedarim. It's Nazir. It's like, you know, it's great for Daf Yomi people, catch up or, you know, whatever. But it's like a few lines on one page.
Doing 1,000 pages of Gemara with Chazara.
Right. Or no, okay. If you're learning with Tosfos, then that's a very long page.
Does that include Rashi?
Everyone does things differently. I have a friend, but a guy that I know lives in Beit Daniel. He is like a Daf Yomi Iyun Shir in Yerushalayim, and he has like retired rabbis, and they spend hours, but they learn the Daf B'Iyun. They go through like all the Rishonim, like on, okay.
That's more than Daf.
Okay. Look, you should know, in Volozhin, they learned like at a quick pace. They would learn, even in the second version of Volozhin, after it was closed and it was reopened, Rabbi Beryl Wine says that his father told him, he went to the second-rate Volozhin, right? Not the heyday Nitziv. Second-rate Volozhin, in winter Zman, just like we're in now, winter Zman, he goes, we in the yeshiva learned all of Kedushin and Gittin B'Iyun. That's what they learned in 6 months of winter's month. It weren't like your Shira predator. Oh, we made it up Gimel. We're very excited. Okay? You know, like, it's, they moved. Okay? They moved. Now, the page that we have was printed in the 16th century. And we have, alongside, we have Rashi on the inside, Tos on the outside. We've got on every page the Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah, which deals with what?
Where is everything found?
No. Okay, with the halacha, good. We have the Mesoras HaShas, which deals with what?
Where
else? Good, cross rep. We have the Torah Or, what's that?
Where the Pesukim
are quoted. Right, where it's quoted. And then you'll also have all sorts of Hagot HaBach or Hagot HaGra that deal with what?
Different versions,
textual variations. Okay, so these are on our standard page. Now, the Gemara is composed of a blend of halacha and agarata. The definition of agarata is anything that's not halacha. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
I heard this morning, I don't know if it's true, I heard that Rav Nevinson has a notebook and he wrote all of Shas inside of it, word for word.
I don't know. But I was listening to somebody, he was giving a shir, and he said that this Rav, I think maybe he said about Rav Chaim Kanevsky, I'm not really sure. He said he was such a genius that he knew. There's like the very, very long shach on like one particular siman. Said he knew that shach ba'al peh. Okay? Then the rabbi paused and said, imagine how great the shach must have been to write that. You know, oh, we're saying, oh, look how great Rav Chaim is. He memorized the shach. Okay, great. Now, okay, like, let's be the shach, right? Okay. So, yeah, there are amazing, amazing minds that are out there.
I
would not be surprised, because I would assume the best way to see if you know something is to see if you could say it, right? So people have for centuries been trying to say, let's do the Shakalataria. Could be that Rav Nevinson said, oh, I know I can do the Shakalataria. Now let me see if I could do this. Okay, Rav Avadia was well known. He would say along with people, like, you know, they start reading a Tosfos and he'd say, you know, the whole Tosfos. Rav Adi would get offended when people said he photographed memory. He goes, I learned that Tosfos like 250 times. Like, Rav Adas. Rav Adas, my bad. My Rav Adia. Rav Adia. Rav Adi Yosef.
Oh, Vadia.
Yeah. So I think Rav Nevinson also, he did lots of chazaras. It would not shock me. Did I hear the story? No. It would not shock me that he would say, okay, I want to know it well enough that I could write it all down. Yes.
I know it was this Rav in Montreal. It was huge. Passed away a few years ago. I don't know his name. I know he was able, like, if I took a needle and you pass it through.
Yes.
Tomorrow.
So that's the thing. Called people. I saw a guy do it, and I saw a rabbi in the yeshiva throw him out. Okay. It's called the pin test. Okay. He sticks a pin through. Someone sticks, and he says, "Okay, I'll tell you what letter it's going through on every daf." Okay, Lamed Gimel Amid Bet. It's over there. So guy came into YU when I was there. One of the rabbis threw him out. And there's a whole crowd around him. I was one of the crowd. And, you know, I thought it was cool. And he threw him out. And he said, that's not learning. He says, that's not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to learn. He goes, he has a photographic memory. That's great. He goes, but that's not what learning is about. And I don't want you guys to be impressed with that. I taught a student in Mireshet Arova, and she told me she has a photographic memory. I said, what does that mean? She goes, if I read something 2-3 times, I will have it there. I said, if I ask you, what's the fourth word on the 15th line? She goes, yes. I said, that's not fair. She goes, I'm not saying it's fair, but that's the type of memory she has.
I don't have
okay?
Memory.
Okay. That's fine.
We know.
And that's fine. That's fine.
Ow.
You know, like, I don't have that kind of memory also, and I'm fine. You know, you asked me if I made a Siyam on Shas. The proudest moment of my life, I made a Siyam on Shas here in the yeshiva about 10 years ago. I take that back. About 15 years ago with my three sons. I learned Shas. 1,000 pages my oldest son, another 1,000 my next son, and all of Kachim and you know, with like my youngest son, he didn't know that was the most difficult and boring Masechtas and Shas, and I learned that with him. And I said, Baruch Hashem, I don't have a great memory, and therefore I'm looking forward to going over it again. Because if I did it, all boring, I know this, but I don't know this. Okay? Every so often I can remember big ideas or really interesting Gemaras. For the most part, I'm learning Baba Kama now. I don't remember the Gemara. I remember concepts. I remember, of course, Shomer, Shemasa the Shomer. I remember different things. You know, concepts. I'm not remembering pages. I'm remembering pages that I learned. And I've already done this not just once. I've done this, according to my son, three times. Because he holds the first time that I did it, which counts as twice, because I learned each stop before I taught it to my kids. So he said, that should count as twice. I said, okay, fine. Using that, then I went through it again one more time. And now I'm picking up for my fourth time because I saw most of my family is doing it. I don't want to be like the only one that's not doing it. I said, all right. So I joined, at front, it was very funny. I was going through the second time. I was here in the Beis Medrash, and this guy, Joe Klein, he was a student, and he went on to become a Madrich, and he still lives here in Yerushalayim. He said to me, so when are you finishing Shas again? Like, he knew, because from an older brother that I made a seam. I said, actually, like next week. And he said, oh, you're making a seam? I said, no. Because it wasn't a big deal for me, because I didn't do it with my sons. So he went over to his rabbis, right? Went to Rabina. Rabina made me make a seam. And I said, I thank Rabina for letting me teach the shir that I teach. Because unlike other rabbis, I don't really have to prepare to give my morning shir. So I have time to learn Daf Yomi. I said, all the other rabbis are up all night preparing to give a Tafiyin shir. But I don't really have to prepare at all. So I have enough time to learn Daf. So everyone laughed. Rabina laughed. Okay, fine. Anyway, running out of time, quickly. What is Agarata? Really, it's anything that's not halacha. And that includes ethics. It includes philosophy. It includes custom, history, anecdotes, folklore, drashot. Right? Very similar to the drasha we have in Midrash Rabbah. So what's an example of halacha? Let's say the first mission above Metziah. Okay, what did we learn last year? Shnayim Ochsim Batalis. You know, and this... Two people holding onto a talus. This says it's all mine. This says this, and then the Gemara starts getting into. How come he's not holding all of it? He's only part of it. How come he swears at least half it's mine? These are all halachot, and that's great. That's a Mishnah that's going through the halachot. What would be an example of agarata? So I'll give you an example. We all know this. Noach, each tzaddik haya b'torah tav. So what do we have? Why it's say b'dorah tav? Some say it's praiseworthy. Some say it's derogatory. Right? So that would be Agarata. I'm getting a drasha. How do I understand it? So this is Torah Shel Peh. We'll stop over here.